Welcome to the English with Kirsty podcast from www.englishwithkirsty.com. Here I'll be sharing with you tips, information and other learning resources so that you can improve your business English. Everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the English with Kirsty podcast. And today I have another special guest. So welcome to the podcast. Maybe you could start by just introducing yourself, your name, and telling us something about what you do.
Hi, Kirsty. Thank you so much for inviting me. And hello, I'm Renata. I live in Brazil. I'm Brazilian. And I live very close to Rio de Janeiro. And I have worked as a translator for about 6 years. I am a treasurer at ABRATIS, which is the Brazilian Association of Translators and Interpreters. And I've mainly been working lately with audiovisual translation, especially subtitling and dubbing script translation. And I've also started to become an editorial translation. I'm taking small steps. And my language pairs are English to Brazilian Portuguese and Brazilian Portuguese to English. And I'm very interested in working with inclusive language. And I have some experience doing that.
That is why you're here. One of the reasons why you're here, because I thought this would be a good topic to talk about on the podcast. Maybe if the listeners haven't thought about this before, it's a good way to start thinking about it. So why did you originally become interested in learning a bit more about inclusive language?
So the first time I heard about it was at a conference, an online conference. I think it was during the pandemic. And it was given by a translator, an editorial translator and copy editor, Brazilian one. And she was talking about inclusive language, and she provided us with many examples. And I mean, it was more practical than, it didn't have a lot of, it was technical, but she didn't explain why it was important, why it mattered to her, right? We just we learned how to do it, and she had a lot of insights into it, and I never really talked to her after, but it had a huge impact, and I thought, well, I could specialize in it. I could make it one of my flags, right? And then I think it matters to me because I'm part of the LGBTQIA plus, sorry about that. And I am part of that community, and I'm also part of another community, which is the community of people with physical disabilities. And I know that both of these communities, they have many guidelines to how you can talk, how you should talk about them, what terms are considered offensive, and what terms are okay to say. And then I thought, well, I don't really enjoy when people say bad things about bisexual people, and I am a bisexual woman. And I don't enjoy when people who are trans are called certain names and certain things. And I've always been very empathetic. So inclusive language was always something that was part of myself, of me, but I didn't have the big picture when I saw that talk about that translator. And then I think this is why it matters to me. And many of my friends are not heterosexual. I have a couple of friends who also, like myself, have fibromyalgia syndrome. And so that's it, basically. That's why it's important to me.
So I guess from a personal point of view, it's something that you were probably trying to do anyway, but after you'd been to this conference or meeting, you decided that it was something you wanted to bring into your professional life as well.
Yeah, I had already had a few encounters with it on linguistic style guides by a couple of my translation clients when I was a marketing translator. But I mean, it was the guidelines were not very specific. You know, they didn't explain why it was important to have inclusive language or general neutral language. They didn't say who invented it and why we should do it, why you should do it. How it only said how we could do it.
And if you want people to do something, it's you have a higher chance of getting them to do the thing if they want to do the thing and understand why doing the thing is important, not just like you have to do, this is another thing that you have to do. If they
Yeah.
buy in themselves, then that makes them more likely to, and to do it consistently, not just after the training, but to make it part of their work
Yeah,
process or the way they think.
exactly. And I think they should have done some sort of training, and we didn't have any training, right? It was just okay, now our linguistic guidelines that contain a part this section that it's dedicated to inclusive language, and then these are the examples that you have to follow, and that's it. That's what we expect of you, and your translation will be judged according to these new standards. It was just that.
Yeah, that's not very helpful. I guess different clients have different standards, possibly. And I guess sometimes you're even educating the clients in terms of what's appropriate or what's best practice because the clients may not know themselves, or they may not have taken the time to educate themselves. So you possibly also educating them. Does that happen? Or
It depends if it's a very high profile client, because when you are a translator, you end up work you work for a client, and this client has other clients who send them the work, and then you know it's not and I'm talking about translators who work for translation agencies, right?
Okay.
When you have a direct client, is much easier. You can, of course, you can. I think you feel freer to make suggestions and to discuss the why, the reason behind things. But when you are working as a I forgot the word.
Like for an
I was going
agency
to,
or
yeah, because I was going to make a metaphor, but I forgot the word. I wanted to use. That's okay, no problem. Yeah, when you are working indirectly, for example, for a translation agency, your client and the people you are constantly in touch with during the project, who are the PMs, right, the project managers, they are the ones who need to listen to you if you have a good suggestion, right? And then they might not feel comfortable in sharing that with their clients, right? Or maybe, you know, because especially if it's a very high profile client, very like a huge business, a multinational business, maybe they won't be very willing to exchange information with them, apart from what is asked of them to provide the service.
They don't want to make it more difficult for
Yeah,
themselves.
they don't want to add another thing. However, there are companies such as Netflix, who is not a client of mine, of course, because Netflix doesn't hire translators. right? Unless you are a translator there, which I know, maybe it's very rare nowadays. We work through another company who is hired, which is hired by Netflix, right? And so Netflix is starting to care about inclusive language. And in 2022, if I'm not mistaken, they put together a course for people who are not as privileged as other people. So they put together a course for Black translators in Brazil. They had already done it in another country, but then they offered this course and they sponsored it. So it was for Black translators and for translators from the LGBTQIA plus community. And then I was one of the people who took this dubbing translation course, and they wanted, so this shows these and other guidelines they have, the internal guidelines that they have for translation, for inclusive language. These things show that they care about it, that their productions are more, they are focusing more on LGBTQIA and more on non-white characters, right? Persons of color. And so that's it. You can't I don't think that this is common in all areas, right? This is happening in audiovisual translation, and I think that there is still a lot to be done in terms of inclusive language in other areas, in other fields of translation. But I've been noticing this importance that has been given to people who are not heterosexual, who are not white. You know, they are getting more focus.
And hopefully, if some big, I don't know, industry leaders like Netflix are beginning to do that, then hopefully others will follow this what they've started and will join them as well. I'm not asking for specifics from this course, but I'm just thinking about the podcast listeners, if this is something that they haven't considered before, what are some easy ways or some points that they could think about to make their language more inclusive? In like day-to-day language or writing, or so not necessarily translators, but just people in general, how can they start to be more inclusive in their use of language?
I think the first tip I would give, or the most important one, is to look for these communities. If you are translating or writing a text, a piece about, I don't know, autistic people, right? If you can look for government guidelines or official community guidelines on how you can refer to them, because I think there is no better way of doing inclusive language than getting close to these people, actually talking to them and asking them. And I have seen that in a few of the documents that I have collected throughout my career, the guidelines, the inclusive language guidelines that I have read, they all say that you should ask people how they want to be called, you know. So, and when talking about the LGBTQIA community, you have to be very careful not to call trans people or non-binary people by their dead name, which is the name that they had, that was given to them when they were born, right? Because these people have other names now, which they consider their real names. And depending on the country, they have possibly made it official, right? I guess some in Brazil, I think it's allowed to do that, hopefully. I don't remember. And hopefully in other countries as well. So I think that there's a lot of you can see like now in LinkedIn you can see the pronouns of people, right? You can put your pronouns up on your LinkedIn profile, and I think on Facebook too. And I don't know if you want examples of now, like real examples
Yeah,
of
examples are good because
sentences,
the
right?
next question was going to be about like how this is handled in different languages because you work both ways in your language pair. So yeah, if you have some examples, that would be good because I think it will help people to understand, you know, what's good, what's not good.
Yeah, I think that in English, as English is not a gendered language, it's much easier. For example, you have the word welcome. If you have like a billboard where you have this written welcome, welcome to blah 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 blah, so and so town, right? You want to be you I mean you always want to be inclusive, right? But it depends on the client. If, for example, if you have to write on a billboard the word welcome, how can you be inclusive? You are already being inclusive because the word welcome has no gender attached to it. But if you were to do that in a billboard in Brazil, you would have to be careful because when we translate welcome into Brazilian Portuguese or even to European Portuguese, we use a word bem-vindo. And bem-vindo ends in a particle that contains the masculine gender, which is o, so bem-vindo. But if you say bem-vinda, then you have a, which is the feminine particle. So if you use bem-vindo, you are only talking about or bem-vindos, right? In the plural. You are only talking to people who are male, right? You are excluding people who are not male and people who are non-binary or agender, people who don't have any gender, or people who have a different gender from female and male. And so in this case, you could do it in two different ways. You could use gender neutral language, which is something that the traditional grammarists in Brazil, they don't approve of it. There are many city councils who prohibit gender neutral language. And gender neutral language is very complex. I'm still studying it, but an example would be bem-vinde, because you are using the E at the end of the word bem-vindo, right? You are removing the O, the masculine, and you are putting a new part, which is the E. So bem-vinde. This E at the end of bem-vindo, this E is not E referring to males, and it's not referring to females. It
It's
refers
neither.
to everybody. Yes, it's neither. So that's why it's so difficult and so controversial. Gender neutral language is very controversial because some people they don't know that language is something it's a living being, right? It goes through changes and language transforms all the time. And one of the reasons it transforms is that some people want to feel represented by language, right? They want to feel included, and then they have a mission, right? They have this mission to try to create a more inclusive language, and that's why gender neutral language was born in Brazil. And you can go online and look up the creator. I'm saying this because I know there is a person who says they created the language, but I'm not sure if this was actually the person, you know, because I didn't, yeah, because maybe it was someone else. I think they are the ones who did it and who started talking about it. So I don't wanna give the wrong credit, you know, but you can, the listeners can look up online and
Okay.
ha
So
so
that's
I
one way. But so if you don't
yeah,
do that, if
that's
you don't
one
want
way.
to be part of this controversy at the moment, what's another way to get around this problem? Is there another way?
Yeah, so clients usually mainly like translation agencies, they rarely say you are allowed to use general neutral language. They say you have to use linguagem inclusiva, so inclusive language. And the includes I have seen general neutral language, which is in Portuguese is called linguagem neutra de gênero. I have seen people calling it in English inclusive language. So I'm using general neutral language as a system that is not inclusive language. Inclusive language for me, a Brazilian, is maybe it's different, you know, maybe the name that people give to this to both languages are maybe the names are not the same. So inclusive language would be to translate welcome as boas-vindas. So boas-vindas would be the noun of welcome. Because there isn't a noun for welcome, right? Welcome is an adjective. And I think that's about it, right? And a verb also, because you can welcome people into your home. But in Portuguese, bem-vindo, we can. So when you use inclusive language, you are basically juggling things. You are basically, it's an alternative and an inclusive way of saying the same thing. So if you can say boas-vindas, which doesn't sound natural at all, the most natural option would be bem-vindo. And so if you wanted to do this literally, you could say boas-vindas. You know, there's no gender now.
Okay.
That's the only reason we changed it. But you are still welcoming people. It's just it. So, but Brazilians are very used to a male gendered language. So every time we hear boas-vindas or we see it, we don't it's there's some it's weird. We are not used to it, right?
Because
It
it's not what
doesn't come
people have done in the
natural.
past.
Yeah, it's not what people would have done in the past. But if you want it to sound more natural than that, I would write something like esta é a cidade tal. So in English it would be hi, this is our town. Something like that, you know, because you are changing the whole sentence. You are not using welcome, but the meaning is still there. And as translators, we do it all the time. We have an idea, the idea expressed by welcome, and then you translate it. You don't have to use the same words or even the same word class. You can change it all. If you keep the meaning, there's no problem. So
And if
if you
you have
say
the space, like if it's audiovisual translation, I guess there you need to be a little bit more careful because if you have a character limit, you might not be able to say all the things you want to say.
yeah.
If there isn't space to write them. But yeah, that's I guess that is the two options, either finding a way that includes everybody in the sentence construction that's already there, or that people that are used to, or you find a different way to say the same thing that avoids the gendered language.
Yeah, you are always trying to make it different by changing word class, by changing the position of words in a sentence. Because in Portuguese we can do it. I think we can do it in English too, to change, like we don't always have to have the subject verb object. This structure is not always, it's not fixed. Right, it's not set in stone in English. It's It exists, but if we wanna write a poem, we could change it. We could focus, put off our focus on the object of the verb instead of on the subject, right? It's been a
Yeah,
long time.
it's also, I guess, easy with English because I mean there are things that I wouldn't say in English, but we only have because we don't change adjectives according to the we don't have different adjective endings for because we don't have the same gender. Okay, there are some nouns that are gendered nouns and you can find a more neutral alternative, but I
Yeah.
think it's definitely easier in English. It doesn't mean that people always get it right in English because there are still things that, you know, that people get wrong. But I think it's definitely harder in languages like, well, I guess all the other ones that I'm speaker or I'm learning, like German has that problem too. So does Romanian. So does Portuguese now. So like, yeah,
Yeah.
with English,
Yeah,
there
the
are other more subtle
Romania.
problems. Yeah.
Yes, there are other problems. And Romanian stems from Latin.
Yeah.
Like Portuguese, so there are probably many coincidences in Romanian and Portuguese.
It's helping me. It's not entirely, I mean, it doesn't help to understand something, but some of the logic, I guess, and the structure makes some things are more complicated in Romanian, but some things kind of make sense, or some words look, if not the same, it looks enough like a Romanian word that I've seen to know what it means, and that's making my Portuguese learning journey slightly easier. But you know, you still have to do the work. You at the beginning of a language, you've still got a lot of work to do, and that's where I am. But yeah,
It
it's nice to
helps,
have two
right?
from the same family, two languages.
And
So
I've been learning Italian on Duolingo, and
ah.
so it's similar to Portuguese, right? More similar to Latin, and I took a couple of semesters of Latin when I was at college. So an Italian really resembles it. And I love Italian. It's very nice. But it's also a gendered language,
Yeah,
right?
same problems, same challenges there.
Yeah.
And I guess French, Spanish is it's the same,
I have a question for you before I
okay.
forget. Because you were talking about adjectives in English, and then I remembered there are two adjectives that I learned. I wanted to check with you as a native speaker and as an English teacher if
He's asking me live on the podcast an English question, okay?
I think it won't be a very difficult question for you. I don't want to put you on the spot,
It's fine, I'll edit it
but
out if I
it'll be
don't
okay.
know the
For instance, the word we have the adjective handsome and the adjective beautiful, I think. Yeah. So I learned when I was a kid that we shouldn't talk about a man and refer to this man as beautiful. We should only say that the man was handsome. And if we called a girl or a woman, right? If we called a woman handsome, the meaning changed completely, but I can't remember now what it was.
It's true that I've just said we don't have gendered adjectives, but we all like pretty as well. For like pretty, beautiful is generally associated with females and handsome. I think, you know, I think people may choose to break that rule now if they wanted to, but it would sound unusual. So yeah, there are, I mean, I don't know, there you could find something like good looking, which is more neutral.
True,
If you
true.
wanted to avoid that, or just break the rules and call anyone beautiful if you think they are, which is my feeling, but not from an English teacher point of view, just from a, you know.
Yeah, why not? Because beautiful and I mean the adjectives we're talking about, they are not gendered. So we could break the rules at any point to we can talk about a non-binary person, for instance. And call them beautiful. We don't have to,
Absolutely.
you know.
Yeah, and I think it's the more people start doing that, then the more it will become common, whether it's that adjective or other things. But I think the more people start doing these things, then it's not the first time someone's heard them, and whether they choose to do it as well is up to them. But it's not like unusual anymore because more people are doing it, and I think that's how a lot of change happens, in that it's adopted by more and more people, and then it becomes normal.
Yeah, and I think also if inclusive language or gender neutral language, if they are adopted by people who they were not meant to represent, it's even more powerful because there are people who in power, right, in Brazilian state governments who have the power to ban these kind of these strategies to represent people, because this is what a language is for, right? We use language to represent a community or several communities. And there are people who are not who are prejudiced, who want to silence people, but they have power. So if we have allies, it's much easier, because then people who are prejudiced, they tend to they are not gonna listen to a non-binary person or a trans person talking about why it's important to use inclusive language, but they might listen to a person who looks like them, or who is a woman, or who is a cisgender female, or who is a cisgender male, who is heterosexual, who is white, all these layers of us. So they might listen to this person.
And that's why I wanted to start the conversation today. So thank you for your time and for sharing your examples and ideas, because that was my intention with this episode, to get people thinking, whether you speak Brazilian Portuguese, or, well, I know you speak English because that's why you're listening to the podcast. It's called English with Kirsty. And maybe you speak other languages too, as the listeners, but just to start thinking about this, and to thinking, is there anything that you can do, podcast listeners and us, to make our language more inclusive? So thank you for being here. Thank you for sharing, and have a wonderful day.
Thank you. Bye.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the English with Kirsty podcast. If you have any questions or comments, my email address is kirsty@englishwithkirsty.com, or you can go to www.englishwithkirsty.com/podcast, where you'll find information about the individual episodes.